You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Back for hour number two. Matt Modica, George Kurtz, and I'm Mike Blewett. We're here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. Or give us a call. You got all kinds of injury issues. We're going to go over some injuries right now at 844-843-6879. Troy Tulowitzki walked off the field in his own power after sliding into third base, immediately headed for the visitor's clubhouse with a member of the training staff. He was removed from the game last night. Right hamstring, tightness in his right hamstring. That's the deal with Tulo, who's currently hitting 260.
Tulowitzki got hurt.
Yeah,
wow.
Shocking, right? That guy.
Hamstring.
Unbelievable. And people were like, there was a time, and you're a Mets fan, there was a time where that rumor was really strong about the Mets really trying to go out and get a shortstop a couple of years ago. Like, do we bite the bullet, pick up all that money? And I remember thinking, like, he's as good as anybody when he's healthy, but he's just never going to be healthy.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, 120 games is like the high end for Tulo.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate because he's a fun player to watch. Yunel Escobar appeared shaken up after getting out of the way of a 1-2 pitch up and in during that bat. So he didn't even get hit with the pitch? He appeared to be in pain after turning away quickly from the pitch, prompting a team trainer to come out and check on him. So he experienced dizziness. It's kind of an odd thing, but we'll have to track that one as well. Pedroia, we talked about. He gets spiked. John Farrell says we will certainly reevaluate him tomorrow. As far as his availability, that means today, the Red Sox needed to help Pedroia off the field after the play. Said he feels okay. Ultimately, it was the knee he had surgery on in the offseason. He just got caught in a weird position. I don't know what hit the side of my knee. Well, so, I mean, that would lead you, that would be worrisome, obviously. But, again, I'm telling you, Machado barely hit him. If it created some sort of chain reaction injury, then that's really unfortunate. But that wasn't. It was not the Chase Utley play from the playoffs a couple of years ago. I assure you of that. Kevin Kiermaier, guy that I have, left the game last night because of a pregame illness that carried over to game time. So maybe this flu bug is working its way around MLB. The Red Sox got slaughtered with it at the beginning of the season. So maybe Kiermaier's out for a couple of days. Miguel Cabrera left the series opener yesterday against the Twins with a right groin strain after stretching. That is terrible news. He'll be reevaluated after stretching for a throw to end the sixth. He'll be reevaluated on Saturday. Well, if Miggy Cabrera is out on the DL, we're doing a really nice job in the fantasy world of getting some high-profile players to hit the DL. Or get suspended.
Yeah, and especially with the new 10-day DL. You're going to just see a higher rate of players going there. I mean, one thing I will say about Kevin Kiermaier, he did leave last night's game, but before that, he made one hell of a catch.
Yeah, so, George, maybe he's not as sick as you, so he hopefully can come back in a couple of days as opposed to having a lingering tuberculosis situation for a month.
Yeah, they didn't test me for that. Maybe that's what it was. They tested for everything else. Well, we've seen it all throughout baseball. What I have is similar to what everything's been going around. It's a nasty viral. You mentioned it. It killed the Red Sox. It's hit other clubhouses as well. And clubhouses are even, locker rooms are even more dangerous. I think the Red Sox actually fumigated their locker room when everybody left, when they went on a road trip to try and make sure they eradicated the flu, disease, whatever you want to call it, going around there. So, hey, it's something you got to deal with. The flu, hey, that's a couple of days. These other injuries we're talking about, it could be weeks. I think Matt said it. Teams are massaging this new 10-day DL.
Sure.
If you cough, DL, go have a DL. You're out 10 days. No big deal. So we're seeing that a lot here. That's not to say we know what's going to go. What's going to happen with Miggy and Tulowitzki. But as far as Miggy's concerned, he was pinch hit for. That was only a 2-3-run game. That don't sound good.
No, not at all. You're right on this 10-day DL. So Dexter Fowler left the game last night with right heel bursitis. That's a 10-day candidate right there. James Shields goes on the 10-day DL. Mike Morin, 10-day DL. Matt Olson, he got recalled. Kendall Graveman looks like he's on track to rejoin Anaheim next week. Matt, you mentioned during the break, it looks like Gene Segura is coming back on Tuesday.
Yes, Tuesday, that's correct. I think he's going to play another game in the minors today. He should be back. And I would assume that Jonas Cespedes will be heading to the DL, to the 10-day.
And what? Explain the nature of that injury.
Yeah, the other night he left the game. They reported it as a cramp. Cespedes said post-game it was not a cramp. It felt like a shock. We had Dr. A on the other day on Old School Fantasy, and he was specifically mentioning, like, be wary of outfielders, especially with Cespedes' structure. You know, when they have to do those quick bursts, they're not, you know, they're obviously not built for that. That's not their game. So, I mean, a guy like Cespedes for the Mets is everything, and I would use extreme caution.
Yeah, tough deal there. George, you expect the same that Matt does, 10-day DL for Cespedes?
Listen, when it comes to the Mets and injuries, I don't know what to expect, all right? They're all over the place with these things. It makes sense, right? Because, once again, the way I look at it is this. It's 162-game season. And you hit in all the off days, I think it comes out to 180 days. You know he's going to miss 3, 4, 5 days. Why just give him the extra 5? I mean, we're not talking about a cold here. It's something he'll be fine. It's a leg injury, a hamstring, a groin. Why not give him a couple of extra days? It's April, for crying out loud. Let's make sure he doesn't have a recurrence of this where he pulls it or tears it and he's out for weeks or months rather than days.
Plus,
yes, I agree with Matt. I would put him on a deal.
Plus, he's such a violent player in the way that he plays. He tries to throw the ball through the back of the backstop. He swings out of his shoes every time he swings. I'm not being critical of that. That's just the way he is, right? He's not a finesse guy. He's all out. And, you know, we had to deal with his back golf scenario a couple of years ago when he had a back injury and he was playing golf. Like, I would just be like, you're out? No golf. It's 10 days. We'll see what happens. We will need you for the rest of the 150 games.
Yeah, hopefully there's no golf to be played during this next week or so.
I guarantee he plays golf, though.
He's
going to play golf. They will say, don't play golf. He'll go play golf. He'll ride a horse there or one of his 52 sports cars.
As long as it's not a dirt bike.
Yeah, that's a great point. Dirt bikes are out. By the way, they are out. If it was a significant injury, now he's the Giants' crown jewel, so they can't get into a...
contract clause.
Yeah, I mean, they can't get into a war. They can't pull a Randy Levine and get into criticizing him publicly, but that is a serious situation. That is a violation of his contract.
Yeah, I mean, I just wouldn't go there. Like you say, he's the franchise. Look, he did something stupid. He got hurt. And they're even saying it could be longer than 2 months. So, I mean, I don't know.
Wow.
I'm hearing reports. I mean, I know Ken Rosen last night even put something up. It could possibly be longer than 2 months. But, I mean, what are you going to do?
There it goes down. It was bad enough. They're playing badly enough.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't know who this helps.
Hey, look, the Mets whole team is a friggin' mash unit, so.
Yeah. That would be a rough deal. J.P. Howell coming off the DL to return to the Blue Jays. They need him because Matt Leto stinks. I'll get to that game a little bit later. I'm just going to do it now because it just reminded me of it. Matt Leto, I'm watching George last night. They do a live look-in. I mentioned this to Matt before the show. They do a live look-in, and Matt Leto is struggling. Shocking. Matt Leitos is struggling on the mound, loads the bases, and Trout.
Didn't see that coming.
And Trout is up. Trout's numbers against the Blue Jays. I'm going to get it for you right now. It is, I took a screenshot of it. His last 12 games versus Toronto going into this at-bat. Bases are loaded. 452. He's 19 for 42 with 12 runs scored in his previous 12 games against Toronto. And the bases are loaded. And Leitos runs a 2-0 count to Trout. And Harold Reynolds, they're doing this live look, and Harold Reynolds goes, uh-oh. And I'm right there with him. I'm like, this is going to be bad. So, amazingly, he throws Trout an outside fastball. He reaches for it, and he flies out. Trout was just guessing that he was going to get something right down the middle and he was going to hit it 500 feet. And then Pujols comes up and Latos is working that count. And sure enough, he gives up a three-run double to Albert Pujols and it all fell apart. He lost a two-run lead and it was done like that. But they were talking about Latos in terms of him being at one point an untradeable asset for the Reds. And now he's a journeyman pitcher.
Yeah, I don't get what's going on with baseball. Look, I'm all for going green, but this recycling of crap pitchers like Latos, Bronson Arroyo, who, I mean, for like daily fantasy, this is like a dream. People want to stack up against these guys, but I mean, is there nothing better in the minors?
George, do you agree with Matt? The recycling, oh, the recycling
guys.
Effort
I
in baseball
up
is over.
Latos last night.
Oh, you did? Nice work.
I did, yeah. That was one thing. Listen, nice. Everybody knew this. This wasn't a big secret here. Oh, I did an amazing job here. No, we all knew to stack up against Latos. Listen, the Jays have been hurt with injuries, right? Haps out. Sanchez is out. So that's hurt them as well. But I think we'll see. They don't want to call up these kids from the minors to start their clock early. That's what we see over and over again. So this arbitration thing is another killer in this instance as well, because we don't see better pitchers. You know, we see these guys who should not be in the majors anymore. You know, why Arroyo has a job? I know he beat Baltimore the other day, which, by the way, is stacked against him there too, and that didn't work out. Why they're still in the majors? I think it's a combination of these kids maybe not being ready. Everybody gets babied now. Not only do they get babied once they reach the majors, as far as, you know, you can't go over six innings, can't throw more than 100 pitches, but they get babied as far as when they start too. If they're not 100% sure you're ready, you're not getting called up. Plus, they didn't want to start that arbitration clock early if they think you're going to be a good pitcher. You know, they think you're going to be somebody who could command a good salary in arbitration. They don't want to start that clock early. So, therefore, we see lesser players in the majors. It hurts the game overall, but it is what it is. It's not going to change anytime soon.
Yeah. Continuing the injury wrap-up, Matt Garza coming back from the DL Monday. Yeah, he's going to pitch the Brewers opener against the Reds at Miller Park. Talk about a journeyman. So David Price threw 30 pitches in a bullpen session yesterday at Camden Yards. Both he and manager John Farrell were happy with how everything seemed to go. That continues. I'm not going to put a number on it. I think they're going to ride this out as long as they need to. No need to rush him back. Sox aren't playing well, but they're certainly not out of it by any stretch. This isn't what's happening to the Giants or the Jays or some other teams that are playing poorly, but David Price continues the rehab session.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much, once the news came out about Price, I just backed away. I had maybe one or two shares earlier on. I just don't want to deal with this. I don't know what to expect. Say he comes back in a month and he pitches a good game or two and then he feels something and then he's shut down. I mean, I just don't want to deal with it. I mean, look, if you have him, you're hoping that, you know, hey, I got somebody that for maybe the last 4 months of the season is David Price again. And then, hey, that's a win.
You want to talk about taking chances? If you're a Bumgarner owner and you need to be out on a wing and a prayer, and somebody's willing to give him up, you're going to get him on the cheap.
Yeah, look, if you got some pitching depth and, you know, He's a guy that, you know, you can offer up. I mean, look, I don't know how long this is going to be. From everything I keep seeing, it doesn't sound good. It seems like he really got hurt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't, until I find out more, I really don't know what to say. It's very tough. Cause
George, is he back before Memorial Day?
Bumgarner?
David Price.
No. David Price?
Yeah.
Is he back for Memorial Day? I'll say yes on Price, no on Bumgarner.
Yeah, no, definitely not on Bumgarner. I mean, they're saying 6 to 8 weeks, and that's the positive news.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Price
and
goes.
We don't know that. As far as the 6 to 8 weeks, is that how long he's just out of the line before he can throw a baseball for?
You're right.
You know, we don't know that, right? I mean, it'll take him another 2 to 3 weeks after that. You may not see Bumgarner go to the All-Star break again, and that might be sort of best case situation. You know the Giants are going to be very careful with Bumgarner. If it's the AC joint, they're going to want to make sure he's healthy. I guess they could push him a little bit if they happen to stay in contention without him. Are they going to go out and make a deal now for another starting pitcher? You know, they reloaded during the offseason, picking up, you know, giving that big contract to Melanson. You know, they think they have a shot here. I don't anymore. I'm not sure if I did even with Bumgarner, but I wonder if they'll be searching the market. And I'm not talking for a crap five star. I wonder if they're going to look for a number two, number three. I wonder if they get in on Quintana.
I was just about to say that, George, is somebody that has Quintana shares. I would love to see him pitching at the spacious AT&T Bowl.
Do they have? Do they have enough?
I don't think the Giants have the prospects.
Yeah, George. George has talked about that a lot regarding the Giants. They're thin with prospects.
They don't have the. I agree with George, but they have Bach, they have Beattie, and they have Arroyo, who people do like as well. The shortstop.
Yeah, but none of that. For what Chicago wants, none of that's enough. Mm-hmm. They want top end. I mean, really top. I mean, listen, Chicago's price could come down, but I don't think it is, not for Quintana. It might come down for Robertson, might come down for Frazier, but I think for Quintana, they're going to want the real deal because of that contract. So I don't see them giving him up for anything but the best of the best. And somebody will pay that.
I was just about to say that. You stole the words right out of my mouth. That's the problem, is that even if the Giants put up a decent offer like that, somebody's going to beat that offer, likely for Quintana, and the White Sox know it.
I think it's going to be Houston, ultimately. I think Houston, as somebody that scooped up Chris Davinsky like 2 weeks ago and anywhere he was available, I don't want to see Davinsky moved out of his situation. I think he's going to get you wins, maybe an occasional save, as he did the other night. He's just too good right now in what he's doing. He's giving you multiple innings. So if he gives you 4 or 5 innings a week, maybe he steals a win and gets you like 9-10 strikeouts. I'll sign on for that all the time because he's giving you fantastic ratios. And Houston is primed and ready to make that move. They have a ton of talent in the minors. Chicago knows that. Chicago's looking at it. And Houston at some point is going to say, hey, you know what? Let's do this. Let's go for it. I think Quintana is still a much better pitcher. I don't think Quintana is an ace. Never thought that. I think he's a good, solid pitcher. And you put him on a good team, that makes him even better.
Good stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about changing trends in baseball earlier this season. We're going to share some stats from some of the stuff we saw earlier this week. So it's Mike, Matt, and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back. This is more like 80s stuff. This is like from Beverly Hills Cop.
Exactly.
Sounds like that. It's like Axel F.
That's such a great movie. That really is.
Beverly Hills Cop. Great movie. Great action movie. I'm not, it's not my favorite genre of films, but I put Beverly Hills Cop amongst the greatest action movies ever, at least on my list. So I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes if they're action movie connoisseurs, but I would consider it to be up there for me personally.
I'm sure some people don't know what the hell we're talking about.
This is true.
I mean, the movie's kind of old now.
It's Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy, 1984. George, Beverly Hills Cop, you're in on that?
Oh, it's not an action movie, but it's a fantastic movie.
Why not?
I mean, I have the DVD. It's not what anybody's considering an action movie. It's a cop movie. Cops and robbers. It's not a whole ton of action in the movie.
There's massive.
Nothing's really getting blown up.
Yeah, there's massive. The semi is like careening through Los Angeles.
There's a couple of shootout scenes. Oh, one little car chase.
What is the genre, Matt? You're the tiebreaker.
I'm going to lean more towards George. It's the comedy cop kind of movie, but you are right. Yeah. There is some big action scenes in there. So I would say it's a comedy cop with a lot of action.
That is not a real answer.
You skirted
everything there.
I did not break
the tie. Yeah, that was a Bryce. That's exactly how Bryce Harper answered that question last night. So you were injured last night, right? I'm really happy that we got the win. Danny Murphy's hitting great behind me. I'm happy to see my teammates have success and looking forward to playing tomorrow. That was the answer. It was like that. That's
and I got
she
a really sweet beard.
Yeah, he's rocking a pretty sweet beard. It's like a tight Grizzly Adams situation going on with Bryce.
He's shaving it in 2 years.
Oh,
I don't care where Bryce Harper goes. I just don't want him going to the Yankees.
I know you don't. Because you're nervous.
I'm very nervous.
Anyway.
I don't think he's going to the Yankees. I really don't.
I think it's a match. I think it's the perfect match. They're going to give him whatever LA or Boston puts up there. Yankees will give him like $50 million more.
Boston can't afford him. L.A. can outbid the Yankees, but Boston can't do it.
They won't need him. I don't know if he's a New York guy. Like, I don't know if he would choose it.
I don't know either. That could be dangerous as well. He'll have to answer the question. The way he skirted that question last night, he won't be able to do that in New York.
He's a really clean-cut dude. I know people think he's a punk, but he's a very clean-cut kind of guy.
Yeah, but a chance to play like, to be like Babe Ruth, you know, that whole mystique.
I'm a Yankees fan. You don't have to sell me on
it. No, but I'm saying that to me is like a big selling point. Look, if he's going to go on to be one of the best players in history, and he could say he was a Yankee great. I mean, what? 2 years from now,
A-Rod.
2 years from now, he'll be 26 years old.
That's how they sold A-Rod.
Yeah, I mean.
To pick that over
Boston.
That's
crazy.
But
Matt just said it. That's in 2 years he'll be 26.
I know. Yeah.
What is he going to get?
That's
10
psychotic.
Years? 10 years. I mean,
half a billion.
Yeah, $50 million a year. You have to think, right?
It's not absurd to put that number out there.
Hey, look, I don't have a problem. Look, if the owners pay these absorbent salaries because they're making good money. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with the CEO of some multinational company getting a $25 million bonus. People freak out over that. Yeah. George Clooney makes $20 on a crappy-ass movie,
yeah.
And people are fine with that. You never hear outrage that way.
Yeah, like he probably made like $15 on Hail Caesar.
Oh, that was probably one of the worst movies ever.
That's why I brought
it up. And I love the Coen brothers.
I've heard, so do I.
I mean,
I've heard really bad things about that movie.
Stab yourself with a fork for 2 hours or something. That was pretty awful. Oh.
So, all right. I'm going down with the ship on Beverly Hills Cop. We'll see. I'm going to do some internet.
I might do that later. I'll stab myself with a fork.
All right.
Slow day.
So this is a... Yeah, this is an interesting...
While watching Beverly Hills Cop, the greatest action movie ever.
Yeah. It's an interesting...
Yeah, I'll put it this way. Yeah. I'll break the time. I'll agree with George. I wouldn't have said action movie. I would have said cop comedy, if I had to describe it.
All right. It's a cops and robbers kind of situation. All right. I get it. You know, I'll take the L on that one. So, or maybe it's a poll. What kind of movie is Beverly Hills Cop? And we'll be three categories. So that'll be the poll. Pete will put it up. What kind of movie is Beverly Hills Cop? Comedy?
He's probably never even seen this movie.
It doesn't matter. He's just got to do the poll. Comedy, action, cops and robbers. Those are the threes.
I've seen the movie.
Pete, have you seen Beverly Hills Cop?
Yes.
You have seen it. All right.
Absolutely.
That movie came out before you were born. I wouldn't expect you to have
it
to
did,
see
way
that.
Before he was born.
It did, but I did watch it. It's a fantastic film.
They had some great villains in it, too.
What kind of movie is it?
I think I have to kind of go with Georgia. I think it's more of a comedy cop kind of movie. I don't consider it action.
All right.
Sorry. We'll put the poll up. We'll put the poll up.
All right, we'll put the poll. So, all right. So, there's an article that came out earlier.
Where's Cardano? He was calling in last week about movies.
Yeah, well, there was an article earlier this week, Sam Miller from ESPN.com, talking about changes in baseball. Now, this one is in the article, but Matt sent it to me. And it's home runs per game, MLB averages. It's no secret that these things have moved around over the decades, but home runs per game, MLB averages. In the 1970s, 1.49 home runs per game. In the 1980s, 1.62, slight increase. In the 1990s, up to 1.91. And from 2000 to 2009, 2.15. And now from 2010 to 2017, there's a drop from the 2000s, but it's still at 1.97 above the 90s average. So, clearly, we're trending upwards. You think? I mean, I don't think we're going to get up to where we were in the 2000s by the end of this decade, but it could approach it considering the way home runs are currently trending upward.
Well, last season, was it the second most of all-time home runs? So, I mean, look, the chicks dig the long ball. Rob Manfred obviously digs the long ball, but since he became commissioner from the middle of 2015 on, look, I do believe certain players have bought into the launch angle. Daniel Murphy's a prime example of that. But these balls are going out at rapid pace. And if you watch WBC, it sells. We get it. Remember when baseball was on strike, came back, the Maguire, Sosa, the steroids, and the home run race. But, I mean, look, a couple of years back, we were having the conversation about the pitching renaissance. That's out the window. It's the home run ball, and it's here to stay.
Yeah, man, the pitching renaissance is really just at the top end. But don't we always have top end pitchers? We just happen to, you know, it happens to be led by a guy who is historically amongst the greatest pitchers of all time. And there's a few other guys. I think the pitching renaissance really is, in some ways, overinflated by people because they see the strikeout numbers up, but it doesn't take into account the fact that guys are just trying to hit more home runs. So batting averages are down, guys are throwing harder, strikeouts are up, that kind of stuff. So I don't know that you could say this is the golden age of another golden age of a pitching era.
No, that's gone, but that was like 2014.
Yeah.
And since 2014, so last year, the starting average ERA, it's up over a half a point from 382 to 434. I mean, 434 was the average.
Wow.
So if your pitcher gets you a 380 this year, that's good.
Any thoughts on that, George, in particular, before I go through the other ones?
Well, I think you guys hit the main points there. I think the batters don't care about striking out anymore. To them, an out's an out. So nobody chokes up with two strikes. No one's slow. Very few batters. Now, take a shorter swing. I make contact swing with two strikes. They're still swinging for the fences. You know, they don't care anymore. So it just doesn't bother them anymore. Listen, you can say what you want about that, whether you agree with it or not, whether it's really true baseball or guys just trying to make sports center over and over again, hit the ball 500 feet. But that's the way the game is now. Balls are thrown harder. So when you make contact, it's going to go further. Most ballparks nowadays compared to the 70s are smaller. You know, it's made for the home runs. Not all. Obviously, PNC and Pittsburgh is more of a pitcher's park. City Field, more of a pitcher's park. But a lot of ballparks are smaller. Batters are also stronger than they've ever been. You look at the players. You can't compare the players now to the players of the 70s. It just can't be done. These players are monsters nowadays. And I'm not talking about the Aaron Judges of the world who are monsters to monsters. I'm just talking about your average ball player. Your average shortstop nowadays is bigger than your power hitter from the 70s. There's a different. We're just bigger people nowadays. So I think all this plays a part in it.
Yeah, and I think there's a stat. Marcus Stroman is one of only six pitchers in the 21st century that are under 6 feet tall.
Yeah, I believe that to be true as well. Yeah, there's something like that. It's something very similar to that.
I could be wrong about it being 6 feet. It might be 5'10" or less, but there aren't any small pitchers anymore.
Yeah, you might be right. It might even be less than 6 feet.
So,
don't even get looked at by scouts. If you're, short pitcher or short anything for that matter, you don't even get looked at by scouts. Or you really have to over-impress to have any chance of being seen or getting a contract, getting a look in, any of that. You have to be so much better than the taller player. It's, and a lot of it, I understand it. If you're bigger, they think you can last longer, especially as a pitcher, that your mechanics will be better. Your body's built stronger. You can withstand the pressure of a full season. I get it. It's not fair, but I get it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much data in every sport now. You know, MLB leads the way because there's so much historical data. But the NFL has it, too. I remember Bill Polian talking about arm size on linemen. There's a breaking point. If the guy's arms aren't a certain length, he's undraftable. He's not going to work out. I mean, he said it definitively. Something like this, there's probably a lot of data stating pitchers that aren't 6 feet tall, their careers only last so long, they can only throw so hard. The NBA is obviously embracing data in a huge way regarding the three-pointers, right? That's a big shift. I mean, you have to understand the three-point line in the NBA was around for decades before this trend started to occur. And now GMs with analytical backgrounds started telling players, these are your best shots. You got to get in the corner for the three. It's the best shot in the court. You want uncontested three-pointers every time down the court. That's the best way to win a game. It's the most efficient way to score. Trying to pound the ball inside and shoot over people is inefficient. You'll score less than a point per possession. If you come down and take an open three, you're going to average over a point per possession. It's just math when it comes down to it. So these types of things play into it. And it wasn't the way I intended this article to go down. We'll dive into it a little bit more, but there's a few other trends in baseball that are pretty fascinating. I think this being a fantasy sports radio show, the talk about analytics is really important. I mean, this is what we're doing at the end of the day, right? We're parsing data. We're trying to come up with our best analytical breakdowns in order to give everybody an edge. So we'll talk a little bit more about this article after the break. It's Mike, Matt, and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, talking stats. Who doesn't love that? I know I do. George, I know you love it. But One of the stats I saw in this article by Sam Miller on ESPN.com is that sacrifice flies are down. This year there have been 0.22 sack flies per game. Granted, it's early, but he's just analyzing some trends. And that's down 12% from last year, which is already the lowest rate since 1972. The 2017 rate would be the lowest since 1954, which is the first year that sack flies were tracked. But what's interesting, too, about that, are we focusing on the right detail? If there's far fewer runners reaching third base with none or one out, then the lack of sacrifice flies would be merely the trees in this forest, is what he says. In fact, there are fewer runners reaching third base with none or one out. So in 2017, it is the lowest rate this decade of guys reaching third base with one. So there's less opportunities per game. Sack flies are down because there's less opportunities. It's only 1.9 times per game that there's even a sack fly opportunity. So I think because of some of these things that we're talking about and home runs and everything else, guys aren't advancing. You know, we run less. There's more home runs. Managers take less chances because their data shows that we need to hit these guys across the bases, not have them run and try and stretch things. So there's less guys getting to third base with one or none out, Matt.
Yeah, so this is pretty much tying into the true outcome aspect, the home run, the walk, the strikeout. And like you said, unless you have like a team built around like say Billy Hamilton and a Jose Peraza or, you know, high end speed, not too many guys that if they're on second are going to try and steal third base.
Yeah, and George, sack fly conversion is even down. Even amongst the smaller opportunities, the conversion rate is down. It's the lowest this decade, 11.6%, which is almost a full percentage point less than the lowest year this decade. So it's interesting. It isn't a stat that pops out to you, and maybe it isn't even particularly fantasy relevant, but it is a stat that pops out and saying, you know what? We're not doing this. This is another change in the way that we grew up watching baseball.
You know, the sack fly. Are batters changing their swings to go for a sack fly? Are they giving themselves up to hit a fly ball to the outfield? Isn't this what they do anyway? I always thought this was a weird stat. They don't get a charge in that bat for this. This is strange for me. I think that's more the guys are sacrificing themselves to hit a ground ball to the right-hand side to move a runner from second to third. That's a sacrifice. You know, not the sack fly. No one's changing a damn thing on the sack fly. You know, why isn't a sacrifice ground ball to a second base to run score? Same thing. The same exact job.
George is making a good point, though. I don't think enough players do that. When they're in certain situations, if you have a runner on second with nobody out, your job is to make sure you at least hit that ball to the right side and get him over. That should be, you know, job number one.
Yeah, and this is probably why there's less sack fly opportunities, right? We're talking about all these kinds of things. Guys do less of that.
Yeah, they're striking out.
I mean, right, they're striking out.
They're still trying to hit the home run.
That's right. And how many times do we talk about somebody tweeted the other night. Gosh, it was one of our friends that tweeted the other night. Maybe it was you. The Schwarber laid down a bunt into the shift.
I didn't, but I saw that.
Somebody said something like, it's not that hard,
that
people.
It was me, by the way.
Oh, it's George Kurtz. There we go. You said it's really...
It was a beautiful bunt.
Yeah, he's like, it isn't that hard, people. There's nobody over there. Just bunted that way. It's Kyle Schwarber, by the way.
Even
he's
Jay
amongst
Bruce
the slowest
it.
Guys in the whole league.
You know, even Jay Bruce did
people
too.
Who want to change, Manfred says he wants to get... At one point, he wants to get rid of the shift. Are you kidding me?
No.
Beat the shift. My God, lay down a bunt, slap a ball to... Why is Chase Headley batting so well this year? Because he's doing that. You know, I used to, as a Yankee fan, it would infuriate me about Mark Teixeira. No, I'm not even going to try. My job is to hit home run. No, all you're hitting is the ball is the short right field and grounding out every damn time, Mark. Yeah. Slap the ball. Get on base. There are times when it's your job to hit a home run. When you're down by a run, you're up in the eighth and ninth inning, yes. Especially if there's two outs. Yes, I want you to try and hit the ball over the short fence and right. But if you're leading off an inning, it's the third inning, how about we slap that ball to the left-hand side? And guess what? You do that 2, 3, 4 times, that shift goes away. They'll play you more straight up. They'll play you more normal, and you'll get rid of it. So this people who hate the shift, listen, it's not that hard to beat. All right, just slap the ball the other way. Lay down a bunt. Practice. Show up early and maybe go to batting practice and lay down some bunts.
I hit a nerve with this Teixeira thing. I did. I just nailed it. I didn't know that it was coming, but I hit a huge nerve with George. You were going to say something, Matt.
Yeah, I was just going to say something about the shift. I mean, I'm surprised I'm going to mention this, but Bill Ripken put something really put a smart piece up on MLB Network within the last week about the shift and the batting averages since the shift has been put in play and how it's gone up over the last few years. And it's been like batted balls in play went from like 299 to 300. So there really hasn't been this egregious thing overall in baseball. I mean, certain players refuse to go the other way and will just, like George said, like Teixeira will just, I'm going to either hit a home run or ground out.
Hits into it every time. You know, it was, that drove me insane. I'm with George on this. I'm not as angry as George, but that's just, it's our personalities. What are you going to do? George is a little angrier than me. It's okay. Love you just the same, George. I'm saying you get a little angry when I do.
I've had more caffeine than you have this morning.
I know. I'm struggling. But wild pitches are up at 0.38 per game. The league is on pace to set a record. Last year's was 0.37. A record up from 2015's at 0.36. Also a record. For most of the 21st century, the league was between 0.30 and 0.32 per game. There are actually fewer base runners this year. And the league's 313 OBP is the lowest it has been in more than four decades. That is unbelievable. The 313 on-base percentage is the lowest it's been in more than four decades. But this is also saying, why are these guys throwing wild pitches when there's, you know, they're not pitching from the stretch? They're just, they're overthrowing, basically. And
yeah, I think it's the velocity aspect. Yeah. Everybody's trying to throw 1,000 miles an hour, put it through the backstop, as they say.
Yeah, average fastball is up from last year. As long as pitchers are throwing harder, nastier stuff that's harder to hit, there's just going to be more wild pitches. I think that's there to stay. Is 0.37 a horrible number? No, but you know, if we do get a few base runners on base, it obviously is giving guys free passes.
I also think, as far as catch is concerned, is remember back when now we're all the age. We've been watching baseball since the 70s, 80s. Back in the 70s and 80s. Even part of the 90s, the catcher was a defensive position. I mean, listen, the catcher, he sucked. You know, I agree with you, there was Johnny Benches, Thurman Munson, sure, but pretty much catchers sucked. They batted eighth and they were automatic outs. All you cared about was handle the pitching staff. That's changed. Now we have a lot of good hitting catchers. You have the Buster Posey's, Gary Sanchez, Jonathan LaCroix, and stuff like that. And maybe they're not focusing on the defense aspect of the game as much. You know, that combined with, I think, pitchers who are sometimes afraid to throw the ball anywhere near the plate, so they throw their curves into the dirt over and over again, I think that gets you the wild pitches as well.
Well, I mean, I think the game's always going to – it's always evolving, and whatever works, people – I mean, the NFL is the ultimate copycat league. But like with baseball, if you build a team, like say the Royals did a couple of years back, where it's a very good defensive team, they're going to make contact, they have speed – a team like that can use bunts. I know people say, don't ever bunt, don't bunt. Hey, we hate the bunt. I mean, in many circumstances, you shouldn't bunt. But there are certain circumstances or certain team, how you construct your team. Like, I remember growing up, the Cardinals team, I mean, besides Jack Clark, that wasn't a home run hitting team, but that was a speed-built team. And kind of like the Royals. They were defensive, fast, they hit for average. So, and then the Royals, what the Royals do with the bullpen? That 7th, 8th, 9th. They were the ones that really got that trend going. So, I mean, things change. When the people see success, they try and copy it.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. A lot of these leagues are copycat leagues, so no doubt there. So, ground ball double plays are up at 0.81 per game. The GIDB rate would be the highest since 2007, up 5% since last year, despite fewer base runners. Double play rates are exactly the same in April as in the other 5 months of this decade, so this isn't an early season trend. Again, with fewer base runners. So here's his hypothesis. As the league gets more comfortable with shifts, which incidentally are up, as you were alluding to earlier, are up again this year, they might finally have solved the challenge of making sure out-of-position fielders are in position to cover bases with runners on. Will it wash out? He thinks probably. Since ground balls aren't up in general, this could be just a slight trend. And it is odd, though, that ground ball GIDPs would be up with base runners being down. The next one, before we hit a break. Before the 2014 season, baseball prospectus prospect writer and now Cubs special assistant Jason Parks summed up the strength of the Twins farm system and the weakness of the Angels like this. Even if the Twins lost their top 10 prospects, they'd still have a stronger farm system than the Angels do. This is what he said 3 years ago. We wanted to see how true that would be. So the Twins top, we took the top Twins 30 prospects from that winter and removed his top 10. And here's who made up the rest of the Twins rest, the best of the Twins rest. Trevor May, Danny Santana, Max Kepler, Michael Tonkin, Kenyce Vargas, Randy Rosario, Taylor Rogers, as we go down, Stuart Turner, a lot of other names on there. But it's kind of interesting that he took out the top 10. So you're not hearing Buxton, Sano, and some of those other names, but there's still players on there that are productive, like Max Kepler.
Yeah, I mean, the Angels pretty much are barren wasteland. Their last real prospect top end was Sean Newcomb, who they traded for Aldrin Simmons. So, you know, when you give up your farm system, it gets tough.
Yeah, I mean, there's no free passes, George. Chickens come home to roost at some point.
Well, that's why we've heard over and over again, is the best way for the Angels to compete to trade Mike Trout and rebuild that system? Do a Chris Sale deal where you're going to get 3-4 top prospects. Is that the best thing for them to do? Now, they won't do it because, hey, Trout's also the only reason anyone's coming to a Ranger game, an Angel game. That's not even a joke. I mean, he is the only reason. So they can't do it that way either, so they won't trade Trout, but that would be the argument there. You're not going to win with Trout and nobody else. And really, it is nobody else. I mean, Pujols is not the same player at this point in his career. Calhoun? No one cares about Calhoun. They have a couple of interesting pitchers, but nobody who's anywhere near ace-like. You know, so that's their issue here. You can play, you know, you can get a certain amount of crowd to come out there and watch Trout play, and your TV ratings will be okay, but you're not going to compete, not in that division.
And the only guy really in that Angels farm system that from 2014, that has been any kind of impact is Cam Bedrosian, actually. CJ Cron and reliever Mike Morin were also in the system, but he states that they traded a group of what was marginal prospects then for any big leaguers they can get. That's Houston Street, David Murphy, David DeJesus, Cameron Maben, Vinny Pastano, Cesar Ramos, Martin Maldonado, and Joe Thatcher. That's not exactly a murderer's row of players. Nobody there going to Cooperstown. So I just thought it was an interesting kind of breakdown. There's one last thing on there about the ground out heard around the world. The highest exit velocity of any hit this season was a 24-foot ground out by Eric Hosmer. So Bill James says, honk if you don't get the point of that stat. He's a lot smarter than me. I think the point is that exit velocity does merit some sort of analysis. And you can't just take the one ground out and state that the whole stat is bunked. It's debunked.
Yeah, no. I mean, you have to deep dive on everything. You have to, you know, search out things. I think the StatCast stuff is phenomenal, and I think it's only going to get better. I personally love using it. I think everybody should be following at StatCast. I think it's a great follow. And look, hey, the more you know, the better adept you are to things. I mean, I don't want stats just to take away everything. I mean, I love stats. I'm a stat head. But I mean, you have to enjoy the game as well.
Yeah, George. Aaron Judge has 5 of the 14 hardest hit balls in baseball this year. He faces Jameson Taillon today, whose 95 mile per hour fastball is the 11th hardest among starters this year. So we'll see how that turns out for Aaron Judge today.
Judge has made some adjustments. Adjustments? Did he mean to do that? it's good. It's scary to think what he could be in a couple of years when he gets more and more experience. Yeah, he's learned. He's even learned from week one, where he doesn't want to get the two strike counts. Where you know you're gonna see the curveballs and the sliders down to weigh in the dirt, and you chase them. Swing earlier. If that's when they're giving you the meatball, giving you that fastball down Broadway on the first or second pitch, swing at it. Don't let it go. And so he's impressed somewhat. He'll go through a lull sooner or later where he'll be striking out 10 times in, you know, 20 at-bats. Once again, pitchers will make adjustments to him. But it's good to see that he's done that so far. And let's face it, he's an at-bat you want to watch because when he connects, man, does that ball go a long way.
Yeah. See Joey Gallo's home run from last night. The only other guy that I thought that matched even close to that was Aaron Judge's home run from a few nights ago. So my ridiculous poll is up on Twitter, by the way. What genre do you think the film Beverly Hills Cop is? Action, comedy, or cops and robbers? So vote away. We'll see what we have by the end of the show. I would say before we hit break, you can take the world's premier 24/7 fantasy sports radio network app with you wherever you go. Download the app now in the iTunes Store or on Google Play and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear Tony Sakata on the treadmill. You can hear us three chuckleheads talking about Beverly Hills Cop on Saturdays. Benny Riccardi in the car or Greg Sussman on the subway. Just relax with the King on the couch or Jake Seely when you're jogging. So please keep updated and informed and download that app and take it with you wherever you go. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store or on Google Play and take the experts with you. We'll be back in a couple of minutes talking a little bit more about stats in the fantasy sports world after this. Wow, what is this? This is really taking it down a notch. It's like it's like Enya. It's like meditation music from Pete Considori. As we go around the world of fantasy sports, really getting you folks fired up on a Saturday. In any event, a lot coming up. We're going to talk football in the next hour. Just talk a little bit about the draft. We're going to be doing some draft shows this week. As well. So sort of diving into, look, we can sit here and parse apart a lot of these players, but until we know exactly where they're going to land, it's, you know, we're just shooting arrows into the dark. It's just it's something that we try to do, and I'm happy to talk about the players, but you get a real fantasy opinion starting Thursday night when these names start dropping.
Yeah, speaking that we're talking about the draft and stuff, I'm excited for, I mean, it's only 3 weeks into baseball, but I'm still excited. I always love the draft. I got a text this week. I wasn't going to Vegas for the NFFC, the National Football Fantasy Championships, but that all changed with a simple text message. I'll be out there for a couple of days in September. But all my breakdowns, my analysis and stuff like that is going to start after this weekend. I want to see where these running backs land. As we know, you know, offensive lines mean a hell of a lot, and schemes and systems like that. So I'm excited for it. I want to take in the draft, though, first. Drink it in, enjoy it, and then start the process come Monday.
Yeah. You know, George, I think there's a couple of things you can really do during the offseason, because rankings will start coming fast and furiously. But, you know, I think a big part of what you can look at now is where are these rookies land. And listen, everybody gets so fired up about rookies, wide receivers in particular. You know, it's not even a regret. The most ill-timed stance I ever took was to try to tell people a couple of years ago that drafting a rookie wide receiver and expecting a lot out of him was a fool's errand. And it was the one year, a couple of years ago, when Odell Beckham arrived on the scene and there were like seven rookies in the top 50 wide receivers in PPR leagues. Well, it certainly hasn't happened since. We broke down the 2015 draft and how bad that's been. The 2016 draft, how'd that go for you? How'd Laquon Treadwell and Josh Doctson do for you last year? I'm just saying, in general, rookie wide receivers are going to bust you if you take them too early. But I think, George, other than these landing spots, you take a look at coaches, too. What kind of coaches are coming in? Matt's a Bills fan. He knows what Anthony Lynn is all about. He moves over to San Diego. How much does that help Melvin Gordon? Like, those are the types of things I think you, from a macro standpoint, you can sit back without even knowing exactly what the depth charts are and say, this is how this team might change a little bit. Is that fair to say?
Of course it's fair to say. Corey Parson, we kid him all week long at all these, the NFL 10s he's already in. You don't even know what's going on yet. I mean, the draft hasn't happened. Training camp hasn't happened. Injuries haven't happened. So much will change. You're drafting now. It's really more about luck. You know, sure, you get your great players and your great players, but you're going to suffer some injuries. There are going to be some rookies there. They're going to push people out. What if Fournette doesn't go to Carolina? What if he goes someplace else that pushes somebody else out? You know, we don't know what's going to happen here. Maybe a rookie quarterback comes in there and is going to start. It's so much will change here. Listen, I love drafting. It's fun. But if I'm drafting in April, I probably have a problem.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll keep breaking that stuff down all throughout the week. We are planning some NFL shows, NFL draft shows. I don't think the schedule's finalized yet, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be a part of one of them. Maybe Thursday night. So we'll see exactly how that plays out. It could be an interesting atmosphere in here. Things get a little crazy at night, and you know, if you got the draft going, and we're seeing who's picked, it's it could be an interesting dynamic here in Rockin' Riley's, where we sit, Midtown Manhattan, 34th Street. So please tune in. We'll be doing something live on Thursday night during the draft, so it'll add to your draft coverage. I know you'll all be watching either ESPN or the NFL Network and those talking heads, but listen to us, because we're going to be bringing you specific fantasy information and how it's going to relate to your team. So when Christian McCaffrey, boom, he gets to the Saints, we know that's going to – God, that would be terrible for fantasy purposes, by the way, because that would muddle that
even
more.
Hey, no Chris Berman this year.
Yeah, no Chris Berman.
Right, Boomer's retired.
Yeah.
Trey Wingo
is taking the draft. It's still to be determined who's going to do NFL countdown there, I think. But I saw Sam Ponder was in the lead there, but whatever. It's broadcast nerdy stuff that I like. In any event, but Trey Wingo, I think, does a great job, and obviously you'll have McShay and Kiper.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll talk a little bit more about the draft after the break. We had a little bit of a short segment here, so I want to talk a little bit more about some trends that are happening in the draft. So we'll figure that out in the next hour. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's a Roto Experts in the Morning. Matt Modica, George Kurtz, and Mike Blue. We'll be back after this.